Okay, I want to thank you very much for all showing up here to my talk, and I want to thank Jason for being my student, being the moderator, because I could basically talk for about an hour for however long I want. So, just want to introduce you to, I'm basically a user of a program called RaxML, and I want to sort of show you some of the pitfalls and good things about it that I've been dealing with and looking at the phylogeny of Hymenoptera as part of the Tree of Life project. So it's really just sort of an introduction to methodology and maybe something to teach you about things that you might want to beware of in the future. Okay, so this is the phylogeny of Hymenoptera that we've produced so far to date. I know you can't read anything on there, but it's based on basically looking at all of 18S, 28S, all the way up to D11, so EF1 and CL1. We're looking at both eye alignments and secondary structure alignments, and the only one I'm going to talk about here today is just looking at the eye alignment and the results we're getting out of that, which is 7,190 base pairs of aligned sequence, and we basically chopped out other real variable regions out of that, so we're dealing with just basically what we think is the core of data. We're looking at RaxML and Bayes analysis. Parsimony analysis does not work in this case. It causes all sorts of messing up of clades and groups on here. So basically, we need a likelihood approach to be able to look at the data for such a deep level divergence where we're talking about something in the Jurassic. And again, we're talking about it. We're using 139 taxa with 23 outgroups, so I think we've got a good sampling across the groups. If you listen to Barb Sharanowski's talk today, you got a history of Hymenoptera classification and some of the things that are coming out. And I do want to point out that we do have a monophyletic Proctotrupomorpha down there. We have a monophyletic Ichneumonoidea. We have a monophyletic Aculeata, which makes everybody happy. We have a sort of a sparse group of Evaneomorpha up there, and also the soft lizer down at the base of the tree. I'll get into some more details about what I think is important here. I'm not going to go through all of these individually. Okay, what is RaxML? I don't know how many of you know about the program, but it's Randomized Accelerated Maximum Likelihood. Its paper just came out in Systematic Biology that explains all the details by Stamaticus et al. It's basically likelihood-based. It optimizes the model parameters on the tree just the same as Bayes does. It allows for partitioned data, so it's not using a single model across everything as in straight likelihood. It's basically, as far as I know, it's only looking at molecular data, so you're pretty much stuck with what you have to produce. It does produce a single tree. You can use a starting tree to help jumpstart your data. Importantly of everything is it's a very fast strategy, so it goes beyond likelihood and it takes it to the point where you can actually get some results within your lifetime. And the last thing is you got standard or rapid bootstraps, and you can actually get bootstrap values for these trees, which is something that's, you know, essentially something you need to do. There's two ways of running RaxML, and this is the real dilemma that I'm going to be talking about here. You can run it in your lab on a little mini cluster or whatever you want to do, which is what James Monroe has been doing as co-author on this. He does the quad-core PC. It's a different approach. So what you do on that is you basically do your standardized method of looking for a best tree using your likelihood parameters, you optimize there, and then you do a standard bootstrap afterwards, so a non-parametric bootstrap approach. And so it's basically what you would normally think. The Cypress site, which is part of a Tree of Life project, is an online site. Everything goes on there, gets run on the San Diego computer. I get back results for all this and within 7 hours at the end of the day with Bootstrap. It's a pretty good thing, but it uses what's called a rapid Bootstrap approach, and then it follows that with a best tree search, which is linked to the results of the Bootstrap analysis. It's kind of a weird thing. It's taken me months to figure this one out. I'll try and give you an idea of what it means. Okay, so Hymenoptera. So this is the quad core PC approach within the lab, where basically, again, we're using an initial best tree search, we optimize the parameters, we look at an a priori slow bootstrap approach, we get this tree with a score of 159, 494, and the interesting thing about that, which is the good thing about this, is we get a monophyletic Hymenoptera, it's got 100% bootstrap support, so we can at least stand by, you know, put some value on that or some value of faith, and we get the Erucids as sister group to the rest of the Apocryta. And as Ronquist back in 1999 said, you know, this is probably one of the best, most supported hypotheses of Hymenoptera and relationships we got. Well, Hymenoptera monophyletic and Erucids a sister group to the Apocryta. They're two things that we need to basically look at as being well supported. Fine. So then Cypress comes out, and I start running my analyses on there, and I want to see what I'm getting out of that. Again, we got an a priori rapid bootstrap, we optimize the parameters, and then we do our final best research, so it's an inverted approach. We get an incredibly better score using the Cypress tree for the tree that we get out of here, which is always a single tree, as compared to what we got on that quad core search. And interestingly, what we get is we get a monophyletic Hymenoptera, but without absolutely any bootstrap support whatsoever, which is kind of unusual, since we got a nice long branch there. And we get Erucids jumping up as a sister group of Stephanids. Now, they don't really look that much alike, but there are some characters. So basically, we lose Apocryta, and we go back to what Grimaldi and Engel had referred to as a U-Hymenoptera, which is basically, you know, Erucids plus Apocryta. But now Erucids have jumped into the middle of them. Okay, you're in a Bayes analysis, and just to show, you know, it mixes up everything. Now we get 100% posterior probability support for Hymenoptera, and we get Stephanids and Arusids, so we're getting all sorts of hypotheses there. Going back to a little bit of morphology, I just sort of want to explain that there is some support for this. I'm not going through all the characters that are sort of optimized on this tree, but, you know, essentially, Arusids plus Apocrita, or this Euhymenoptera, is supported by all of them being parasitoids versus a Symphyta, which are plant feeders. The difference between Arusids and the rest of Apocrita is all of the features which are correlated to going to a wasp waist, so it's a shift of that first abdominal segment up and slamming into the thorax. That's a pretty major character. The larval gut system is basically goes from a symphyte and open gut system to an apocrite and closed system. We know that Arusids are sort of intermediate, that they've got a diverticulated gut system, which was studied by Lars Wilhelmsen. And Stephanids, for any of you who want to tear apart some wood and try and figure out what their larval gut system is, we really need to know whether it's diverticulated or whether it's closed. And then finally, Labyrinthodontids, have been doing some work on mouthparts, and there's a great deal of similarity, actually, between Arusids and Stephanids, which is not shared with the other Apocrita. So there's some support morphologically for both hypotheses of where Arusids might belong. Okay, back to the dilemma. So again, got this idea, quad core, we got worst likelihood score, we got a Hymenoptera with 100% bootstrap support, Arusids are sister, and we're running this with a standard bootstrap non-parametric process. Under the Cypress site, better likelihood score. We got Hymenoptera with no bootstrap, which is odd. And we got Arusids are included with Stephanids, which might be possible or not. And again, we're using this rapid bootstrap approach. Okay, brief details. Anybody has followed the manual, I want to show you what I'm doing so that you can say, okay, that's a bunch of crap or whatever you want to do. But this is the best tree approach. This is the slow, regular approach. You use RaxML, you start off with 10 randomized trees. We're looking at 4 gene partitions. We do a series of 20 tests to produce the minus I setting to produce a tree set with the lowest likelihood score. We then allow subtree pruning to float around on the 10 nodes and determine our minus C for a total of 40 tests. And James has been working with Alexis to make sure that this is about as robust as we can ever get it. And then you run RaxML with 1,000 inferences with 1,000 randomized MP trees. We get a better score. So then you do this 500 bootstrap reps with settings from this. And again, this is about 2 weeks to get through this particular analysis. So now we move to the rapid bootstrap. And for those of you who haven't seen this before, the regular bootstrap, again, is a non-parametric resampling method of going after your data, and you just run multiple data sets and get your bootstrap analysis. Everybody should have an idea of what that is. The fast bootstrap, if you really want to get a good review of this, Soltis and Soltis reviewed this and sort of talked about how this was produced. It was basically an idea of how do you get bootstrap support for likelihood trees when a regular likelihood analysis runs for 2 months. You know, it's hard to do, like, you know, make it last for 20 years or something like that. So the idea is you could just build your trees up and just use those trees and build them up 1,000 times and just use those as the sort of the worst method of bootstrap analysis. Or you could do a limited search or something like that and push through on that. So it's never quite as good as a regular bootstrap, but it's considered to be good enough. Then you move to the rapid at RaxML rapid bootstrap, which basically assumes again that the final trees that you're building up are close to the final result, but then you do this limited radius search to find the shortest topology. So when you're doing this RaxML best tree search, you go with or without starting trees, you run the rapid bootstrap analysis, you fix the number of searches, or you can choose automatic, you optimize your parameters on the bootstrap topologies, you resample the best tree in every 5 replicate searches, then you do 10 best replicate resampled trees as your start trees, then you optimize these for your final best tree. So again, you're using those scores optimized on the bootstrap trees. Now you go from bootstrap to resampling those trees to optimizing your best tree. Okay, back to the cypress trees and what the problem was. So why is there lack of bootstrap, Hymenoptera bootstrap support on those trees? Well, it comes out that Amphiasmenoptera just jump into Hymenoptera. That's not a good thing. And you can see down here, we've got, you know, some moderate bootstrap support for Hymenoptera plus Amphiasmenoptera. I don't think that's a good thing. What we did do is a minor correction on that by just running a start tree. So just using a start tree that we got from one of our best tree searches from the first part puts the Amphiasmenoptera outside of Hymenoptera, but we're not really getting strong bootstrap support down there. You can see that 59 down there. It's a fairly low value. Okay, what about looking at placements of Arusid's sister group to Apocrita or a sister group to Stephanids? One of the things we looked at was basically tuning the cypress on the cypress site to look at rapid bootstrap. We looked at different numbers of bootstrap replicates as sort of seeds, so we looked at 100 bootstraps. We used auto, which always focused on 200 or 250 bootstraps. We used 500 and 1,000 bootstrap replicates, all to sort of optimize the parameters. And secondly, we looked at 5 replicates each and going through and changing the seed numbers. And if any of you try to use a Cypress site, don't use the same seed number because it'll give you identical results. Okay, so what did we get? We got a range of tree scores and topology. So the best score, the little blue box at the bottom, is basically what we got out of the quad core search in terms of its likelihood. You look at all these other things. It's not coming up with one tree. It's actually coming up with a series of different trees with different scores, which is kind of an interesting thing that you have to be aware of. And I know Jerry Regeer has been looking at this for Garley, and he's getting some of the same results out of that. If you look at this, using the automatic feature on the Cypress site, it gives you a range. It doesn't give you the best tree scores, and it doesn't give you the worst tree scores, but it's certainly not giving you what you would consider to be the most optimized way of looking at these things. The other way is to look at 500 reps. It seems to be generally doing better than this, but I'm sure if I ran 1,000 of these replicates, it may all just become a random sort of procedure. None of these trees are proved to be significant from each other, but the best trees from the Cypress site are significantly different from the best from the quad core trees. And rather interestingly, these trees are all different, because basically if you look at these columns, we got whether Apocryta is monophyletic or not monophyletic, whether Amphiesmenoptera is jumping in terms of bootstrap support, or basically whether the Arucids are sister group to Apocryta or whether the Arucids are sister group to Stephanids. So it's variable in that result. And we're also getting this really bizarre variability in whether Hymenoptera are monophyletic or not. And again, where it's no means that Amphiesmenoptera jump into Hymenoptera in the bootstrap trees, and where it says yes, it's very low bootstrap support in all those cases. Okay, so this is basically the summary slide. Is again, you're looking at standard bootstrap on the quad core versus rapid bootstrap on the Cypress site. Standard bootstrap gives me 100% bootstrap support and Apocryta monophyly. Rapid bootstrap, it's a really fast program, it's easy to use, and a lot of people are going to jump in there and be able to use this on all their programs. And I think that's dangerous, because here we're looking at a case where we got Hymenoptera with 50 to 75% bootstrap support. We got Apocryta highly variable in what their monophyly is, so you can't trust the one tree that comes out. You have to run this thing multiple times. We found it so far that 500 reps is best, but I'm not sure how that's going to work on different data sets. And again, it's giving a better tree score, but whether that's necessarily a better tree is something you really need to watch out for. And lastly, I just want to make sure that, you know, this is back to the black box hypothesis days, where you really should understand what you're doing and take a look at it before you trust what you're getting out of these results. And that's it. Thank you. Oh, sorry. I do want to thank a lot of people here for their help.